My name is Heather Benke. I'm with the Office of General Counsel at the Department of Public Service, and I'm here with my colleague Jeremy Flom from the Office of Energy Efficiency and the Environment. And we're here tonight to give you a brief overview of the Article 7 law and how it applies to the West Point project. After our presentation, a representative for West Point Partners will present an overview of the project for the company. Because we would like to stick to our schedule, which I'm afraid we've already started late, we would ask that you please hold your questions until after both presentations, and we'll be happy to answer your questions at that time. Questions about the Article 7 process can be addressed to the Department of Public Service staff, which have a table in the back, or Jeremy and myself. And questions specific to the project will be answered by the West Point Partners team in the back corner right here. So for those of you who aren't familiar with Article 7, it's part of the public service law that provides a comprehensive process for review, application to construct and operate meter transmission facilities, and I'll describe what that is in a minute. Article 7 was enacted in 1970 to establish a single forum for reviewing the need for and impact of certain major electric and gas transmission facilities. The law and regulations are available on the DPS website, which will be repeated several times here on the slides, as you can see they're up here. And for anyone interested, staff has brought Article 7 fact sheets and guides that are available in the back corner, which have all this information in them. So for purposes of Article 7, a major transmission facility is a facility that is 125 kilovolts or more and 1 mile or longer, or 100 to 125 kilovolts and 10 miles or longer, and the West Point Power Project, which is case number 13TO292, is covered by Article 7 because it's 82.8 miles long of 345 kV. Article 7 requires applicants to apply for a certificate of environmental compatibility and public need, which we simply refer to as a certificate. The Public Service Commission, which we also refer to as the PSC or the Commission, must make findings before issuing a certificate, and we'll describe in more detail what those findings are later. And applicants must meet Article 7 requirements before constructing any facility covered by the law. And I'm going to hand this over to Jeremy.
My name is Jeremy Flom. I'm from the Office of Energy Efficiency and the Environment at the Department of Public Service. I'm going to just talk briefly about the Article 7 process, applications, and some of the processes as we move forward with the application for this project. Article 7, when the Public Service Commission receives an application for an Article 7 project, some of the requirements that all applications must include are a detailed description of the facility and route, including maps and aerial photographs, description of the facilities in terms of infrastructure, transmission lines, substations, right-of-ways. Applications must include a description of the need for the facility, an environmental assessment of the facility, and a comparison of any reasonable alternatives. When an Article 7 application is filed, it is submitted to the Secretary to the Public Service Commission. Municipalities in which the Article 7 project is proposed, state legislators, and several state agencies. An Article 7 application, when it is filed, is also made available at several local libraries for public review. For this project, there are several libraries which are listed up on the screen throughout the project area where the application is available for review. It is also available online at the Public Service Commission website, shown below. Objectives of the Article 7 siting procedure are to minimize impacts, which include environmental impacts, quality of life impacts, both during construction and operation of the facility. These range from water quality, land use, agricultural, historic resources for environmental impacts, and traffic, dust, and noise, electromagnetic field impacts, visual impacts, all of which are analyzed and assessed during the Article 7 siting review process. Another objective of the Article 7 process is to provide a forum for the resolution of issues from line location to matters of state and local law, and to provide an open process for public participation, citizens and interest groups, municipalities, and other state agencies. Article 7, for those of you who are familiar with the State Environmental Quality Review Act, also referred to as SEQR, Article 7 is not subject to review under SEQR. However, there are numerous and vast similarities in the processes. Just as is the case with SEQR, Article 7 requires an environmental analysis, requires impacts minimization, and allows for full public participation. The West Point Partners Project was docketed by the Public Service Commission in case 13T0292. Department of Public Service staff that are assigned to review the project proposal include engineers, environmental specialists, legal counsel, consumer outreach specialists, and an administrative law judge, also referred to as a hearing examiner, or ALJ for short. Statutory parties to Article 7 proceedings include the applicant and several state agencies. Statutory parties are automatically formal parties to the proceeding. However, others may also file a notice of intent to become formal parties to the proceeding within 30 days of notice of filing of the application. Formal parties may include municipalities where the line is proposed, residents of those municipalities, environmental and public interest groups, and utility companies. Another way to become a formal party to an Article 7 proceeding is to request permission to intervene as a party from the administrative law judge. Formal party status, also referred to as being an active party, allows a group or an individual to participate in the evidentiary review of the project. This includes participation in discovery, discovery questions to the applicant or other parties, presentation of written testimony and analysis, participation in evidentiary hearings, filing briefs and motions, and participation in settlement discussions if any occur for that project. There is an intervener funding that is made available for certain Article 7 projects. The fund is available for municipal and other parties, and any municipal or other party except the applicant may request funds for such things as expert witnesses, consultants, and administrative and legal fees. Requests for funds shall be submitted to the administrative law judge no later than 15 days after issuance of a notice of pre-hearing conference. That date has since passed and the initial award of funds has been provided. However, there is a second award of funds that we'll talk about in just one moment. For this project, an intervener fund of $350,000 has been established. That is based on the length of the line, West Point project is approximately 83 miles of 345 kilowatt power. Another way to participate in the Article 7 process without being a formal party to the proceeding is to be an informal party. Any individual or group of individuals can participate without becoming a formal party and participate in public statement hearings such as the one we're having here today, submitting written comments to the Secretary to the Public Service Commission, and requesting to receive correspondence by signing up to be on the service list for a proceeding. To do that, you go to the Department of Public Service website, select the link for this case, 13T0292, and select the Subscribe to Service List tab that allows you to receive correspondence and notifications about the proceeding as it moves forward. Anyone can comment in an Article 7 case, including this one. Written comments regarding the case may be submitted to the Secretary, Kathleen Burgess, at the New York State Public Service Commission, the address above. Comments can be written and mailed at the address above, may be emailed at the email address, secretary@dps.ny.gov. And comments can also be submitted electronically by accessing the case file for the case 13T0292 at the website provided and selecting the Post Comments tab. The schedule for this case, just to give a quick overview, newspaper notices were published prior to the application being filed with the Secretary to the Public Service Commission. The application was subsequently filed on July 1st, 2013. The application was deemed deficient and multiple supplements were filed in response to those deficiencies identified. And then on February 4th of this year, the application was deemed compliant with Section 122 of Public Service Law. Procedural conference was held before the administrative law judge on March 20th, and an initial award of intervener funding was issued on March 25th. Town of Portland, the Town of Village and Athens jointly, Scenic Hudson and Riverkeeper received initial awards for intervener funding. Public statement hearings were held this afternoon here in Athens at the firehouse. Then now this one this evening, and next Wednesday, April 30th, in the town of Portland. As we move forward, second opportunity to request intervener funding. Requests must be filed with the Public Service Commission Secretary by May 14th. Discovery, questions for applicants or other parties is ongoing, and the administrative law judge has established a hearing schedule for this case. Some major milestones for the hearing schedule moving forward. Hearings for examination of the application will be starting July 21st. The deadline for identification of alternatives proposed by other parties is August 1st. There will be subsequent site visits at the end of August, August 27th through the 29th, to get out in the field and look at the proposals both by the applicant and by other parties as alternatives. Deadline for testimony and exhibits for parties other than the applicant is September 23rd, and then filing date for rebuttal testimony would be October 9th. A second round of hearings would be conducted at the end of October, starting October 28th, which would be hearings on other parties' testimony and rebuttal testimony. It does not include the applicant's direct case. So just to clarify, there's a two hearing schedule that's being established. The first hearing is strictly on the applicant's application and direct case, and that hearing will begin on July 21st, and then after parties have had an opportunity to propose alternatives and provide their own written testimony on the application and the proposed project. Then a second round of hearings on those things will be held at the end of October.
The typical process for Article 7 projects can take one of two potential tracks, a settlement track or a litigation track. In the settlement track, parties negotiate, they put together a joint proposal, they can submit statements in support or opposition of that proposal, and then they have an evidentiary hearing on the joint proposal before the administrative law judge, and then it's finally reviewed by the Public Service Commission. The other track, which is the track that this case is on, is the litigation track. It has separate phases. The first phase is the hearing phase, which may include identification of alternative routes and the site visits, which Jeremy was just telling you about, pre-filed testimony and rebuttal testimony, the evidentiary hearings where the administrative law judge presides and evidence is presented and cross-examinations are taken of the parties. And at the close of the hearings, parties may file legal briefs and in support of their positions, and any party who wants to refute the position of other parties may submit reply briefs to those. The litigation phase ends with the decision phase, at which time the administrative law judge reviews the information in the record and the arguments made in the briefs and prepares an analysis of those issues and may issue a recommended decision, also referred to as an RD. If an RD is issued, the parties may dispute the ALJ's analysis and recommendations in brief on exceptions. Then the parties are usually given an opportunity to dispute the conclusions of other parties in what we call briefs opposing exceptions. The commission then reviews everything and issues an order explaining its decision. Once the commission decision is filed, parties have 30 days to appeal that decision and to seek a rehearing. And again, only parties have that opportunity, so it benefits you to become a party if you think you might want to challenge the ultimate decision. Before the commission grants a certificate, it must make findings for each project that include the basis of the need for the facility, the nature of any probable environmental impacts, whether those environmental impacts have been minimized, in addition, the PSC must find whether any part of the facility should be placed underground, whether it will conform to state and local laws and regulations, and whether the facility will be in the public interest. Ultimately, the commission may grant a certificate with appropriate conditions, which could include impact mitigation measures, alternate location, alternate designs, or it could deny the application if the facility is not needed, or if the impacts are too great and can't be mitigated, or if it finds it's not in the public interest. In addition, it could approve with modifications, or deny any proposed settlements. If the commission approves an Article 7 project, there are additional steps that must occur prior to construction, which Jeremy's going to go over with you.
So if a project is approved and certified by the commission, project developer has additional responsibilities before construction can commence. Project developer must provide detailed plans. They have to go out, perform additional surveys of the right-of-way and easements, and develop an environmental management construction plan, which would include environmental protection measures, as well as human health and safety protection measures, as well as detailed engineering design plans. There's a public review of the environmental management and construction plan. This is also referred to as an EMCP, so that We don't have to say environmental management and construction plan so many times. An EMCP is a public review and comment opportunity for this, and then a separate approval process by the commission for the EMCP. So there is an additional step if the project is approved for you to participate and continue to be informed and provide your input for the commission. An EMCP must be approved by the commission, and the commission can make modifications and place conditions as appropriate on any EMCP approved. Public comments are taken into account and relied upon during this process as well. If an EMCP is approved, additional responsibilities of the project developer prior to construction are to obtain access rights for all their right-of-ways and access ways. Once construction begins, construction must be conducted in accordance with the approved EMCP plans. Construction may include grading, clearing, access and facility construction. During construction, project developer will be required to implement environmental controls to protect water quality, erosion controls, traffic, dust, noise, etc. And then once construction is complete in a certain area, and then as a project-wide, restoration activities, landscaping, drainage repairs, site monitoring, site restoration. When a project is complete, a right-of-way vegetation management plan is required for ongoing monitoring and management of the existing right-of-way. During construction, Department of Public Service compliance staff frequently monitors in the field construction to ensure compliance with the conditions of the certificate and the environmental management construction plan. And they do have stop work authority if construction is being conducted out of compliance with mandatory requirements. Article 7 website for additional information is provided above on the screen. Through the Article 7 website, you can also download a copy of the guide to the Article 7 certification review process. We do have hard copies available just outside the doors there at the entrance, as well as a fact sheet, Article 7 fact sheet, which is available at the entrance. Through the website, there are links to Article 7 major electric and gas transmission facilities cases, in addition to this one. Many of the other cases, or it should be all the other cases, are available through the website. And also links to the Article 7 applicable regulations, so that if you're interested in looking up what the rules and requirements are for Article 7 as they apply to this project or another project, it is Part 85, 86, and 88 of the Article 7 regulations. You can access the case file through the Article 7 website. Select the link to case 13T0292. I do apologize for some of our handouts. There was a typo on there. I think we tried to correct them all handwritten, but if there wasn't, it was the wrong case number on that last page. So please note the case is 13T0292. You can go on the website, select Post Comments tab. Like to post comments through the website, or you can also comment by submitting written comments to the Secretary of the Public Service Commission. Please reference the case number as well as West Point's Partners Transmission Project, and you can also submit comments via email if you like. That concludes our portion of this presentation.